Hello, everyone, and welcome. Too many of us are going through life stressed, anxious, depressed, and alone. We carry scars from our past that follow us into the future. But what we've seen as weakness turns out to be our greatest strength. We are not the damaged, the defective, or the weak. We are the unbroken. All right. Hello once again, Unbroken friends and family. I am your host, Pete Bucher. It's a delight and a privilege to be with you here. As always, I'm really excited about this episode. I think you're in for a real treat. And this is going to be a topic that I know is very near and dear to a lot of your hearts, just based on the feedback that you've given me and based on my experience with the topic of this show. So I'd like to welcome into studio. This is my first in studio interview for the show. Author, coach, activist in certain to certain degrees, and just overall amazing human, Peyton Turner. Peyton, thanks for being with me today.
Absolutely, it is, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and in full disclosure, Peyton is a more than a near and dear friend of mine. She is my BFF and my partner in crime. Really, without Peyton's support, this show wouldn't even be possible. So each of you who have found this show to be resonant for you, really owe Peyton a debt of gratitude. But the reason that I have her here today is because she has an amazing story to tell, and she has written a book sharing her wisdom, sharing her knowledge. It is called Rise Up From Ash, and I will put the link to the book in the show notes because I imagine a lot of you are going to want to get it. And we'll also put some contact information for Peyton in there. But just maybe to get this kicked off, Peyton, why don't you share with the listeners what brought you to this point? What was it that made you write this book? What was the inspiration to do so?
Yeah, so, gosh, there's such a long story behind the book. But really, I guess to get to describing the point at which I decided to write the book, we should give a little bit of my backstory.
Yeah, please.
So I decided to write the book when two really major things happened in my life. The first thing was that I started to really tap into my own intuition again, and I started to heal some old wounds. And I know that this show is really all about getting to those old childhood trauma wounds and healing those. So I had already done that work. And in doing that work, I had really learned to tap into my own intuition again. And that helped me get out of an abusive relationship at the time. So the act of healing my old wounds and reacquainting myself with my own intuition led me down the road of leaving an abusive relationship. And once I left and I got some space and some freedom and I had some time to heal from that, I realized that there were what I realized is that I really wanted was somebody who had been where I had been, and who had endured the same things that I had endured. I wanted to talk to somebody like me, because the nature of abuse is that it's so insidious and it's so in the closet. And when I was leaving, I really had nobody to talk to, somebody that could be like, oh yeah, me too. And oh yeah, that happened to me. And this is how I did it. So I used my, you know, I kind of found my intuition. I left. And then I found myself really wanting to be a lighthouse for other women who were in a similar situation as I. So that was kind of the whole reasoning behind it. And actually, honestly, I was a little kind of pissed that I'd had to go through it all to begin with. And I just didn't want anybody else to have to suffer. So I figured if I could help women tap into their own intuition and help them realize how to get on their own path of truth, then naturally they'd be able to get out of whatever kind of toxic relationship that they may be in at the time. So that was really the impetus for writing the book.
No, that's fantastic. And what a gift. It's such a powerful, we talked on a previous episode with another person who had written a book and shared based on her own healing journey, sometimes just having your story, your own story validated is so powerful. And I think certainly in the early part of your book where you talk about your experience, so many people are going to resonate with this piece of the story. And I want to be a little careful not to, number one, go into the weeds, but number two, not to cross any lines here. But one of the topics that you really get into in your book and is so part and parcel with the story is the insidious nature, particularly of abuse that comes at the hand of a narcissist. And we know that the person of mention in your book does not carry an official diagnosis, but certainly some of the tendencies, and a lot of people in this audience have mentioned that they have suffered damage at the hand of narcissists, either from a partner or from a parent or otherwise. And I often say that, you know, we talk about, you know, physical abuse or sexual abuse, it's sort of easy to realize at some point that you look back and you go, wow, that was really inappropriate, that something really starkly bad happened to me. But when we get into mental and emotional abuse and narcissistic, I think narcissistic abuse is one of the most, it's the one of the most insidious and most damaging, because the narcissists are so good at manipulating the story and at manipulating your emotions and your version of the story around them. And so I know that this piece of coming back into your intuition, realizing what's true for you and what's not, is part and parcel with the healing journey for you. But I want to share just a passage from early on in your book, because I think this just will speak to so many people who listen to this show. And the first chapter, guys, is called Death by a Thousand Pinpricks. And Peyton mentions that the abuse happens, it's subtle, that it happens one pinprick at a time, that they sting a little at first, then subside into numbness right before the next pinprick is delivered. And she says, but in an abusive relationship, that first wound is barely healed before the next injury occurs. Before long, you're covered in thousands of tiny holes, and your body is losing more blood than it can replenish. Abuse is a slow bleed out of your soul, a long and insidious spiritual death. Wow. I mean, I read that.
And was like, wow. Yeah. I can't believe I wrote that.
It's life. Beautiful, but this is what abuse does to us, right? What, regardless of how it happened. And I talk a lot in the show about that being abused or growing up in an abusive situation or being in a long-term abusive relationship, how it's often the damage that continues after the abuse itself has finished, based on the stories we tell ourselves, based on our confusion about ourselves or our inability to trust ourselves or other people. So talk to me a little bit about this deeper realization. When you started to realize this death by a thousand pinpricks, what was it that started to help you move forward, move back into yourself, start to uncover, you know, the truthful elements of yourself underneath all of that tissue damage, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, so to back up a little bit, what you mentioned in the beginning, that no, the person I'm speaking, the person about whom I am, who I'm speaking in the book, has never had a formal diagnosis of narcissism. But, you know, do many narcissists really get a formal diagnosis? Because none of them really go to therapy in order to be able to get a diagnosis, because they don't think that there's anything wrong with them. So, but all that being said, no formal diagnosis, but certainly just so many narcissistic tendencies. And it's very subtle. For me, it was emotional, mental, and verbal abuse. And it is very subtle. It's like a little pinprick and then the next pinprick and then the next one. And, you know, just like I had said, it's a slow bleed out of your soul. And it gets you to a place where you really don't even know who you are anymore. You have glimpses and memories of who you used to be. And fortunately, I have an awesome network of friends who were always there to remind me of who I was. But still, regardless, I mean, you get to a place where you're isolated and alone, which again is part and parcel for the abuse. And your soul has bled out and is left in a puddle on the floor. And now you have to heal. And so for me, really having that strong grasp of my own intuition, which really is the pilot light of my soul. Like, everybody has intuition. I'm not special. Everybody has it. It's the pilot light of your soul. And really focusing on that little tiny flame that had not been snuffed out and building that back up again. And just really remembering who I was, remembering, as in I had been dismembered and I was remembering, coming back together.
Yeah, and that's very powerful.
Yeah, so that's really how it was. So it was what I did was I did things that I loved. I went to yoga a lot. I talked to old friends who remembered who I used to be before I got into that relationship. I cried a lot. I allowed myself a lot of space. I took a lot of baths with Epsom salt, and you know, I meditated every day, and I really created a spiritual practice, a daily spiritual practice that that really kind of helped to soothe some of those old wounds. And I really, at this point in the game, I'd had a lot of therapy and a lot of self-help, and I'd done already a lot of healing work. So I knew that really the only way to truly heal was to stare the fear in the face and walk through it. And to not, you know, sweep it under the rug and scurry off into the next relationship without healing some of those old wounds that were there way before my ex ever came along. So it was really being having the courage to kind of look deep. And I know that your listeners are doing that a lot. And that's just so important, like to really dig deep and not get in the place of blaming other people, but to really figure out, okay, so what is this about me that attracted me to this person in the first place? You know, and for me, it was a not enoughness belief. So where did I get that? How can I shift that? And once that gets shifted to a place of truth, then the likelihood that I'd ever get into another relationship like that again is pretty small.
Yeah, and that's such an important point. Now, there's so many nuggets of gold in what you just shared there that I do want to kind of pick through them in a thoughtful and hopefully meaningful and cogent way for the listeners. But the first piece that I kind of want to talk about is, you know, to get healing, to get out of an abusive or toxic relationship, first you have to realize that you're in one. It's a hard awareness. It's a very difficult awareness to come to, that I am in this abusive relationship. And in your book, you talk about the National Domestic Violence Hotline definition of abuse. And I think this is stark for several reasons. So I want to read this to the listeners. This National Domestic Violence Hotline defines abuse as a pattern of behaviors used by one partner to maintain power and control over another partner in an intimate relationship.
Mm-hmm.
A pattern of behaviors used by one partner to maintain power and control over another partner. It's so subtle. And even with childhood abuse, I learned that childhood abuse was any behavior, controlling behavior by a parent or other caregiver that blocks the child from experiencing their own reality, you know, their own emotions, their own thoughts, from having a, you know, that creates a negative view of themselves. So the definition of abuse is so wide and broad. It's amazing that anyone ever gets through life to some point without being abused at some point. And I think that's the deep awareness that's coming from a lot of people that I'm hearing from regarding the show is, wow, I never really thought of myself as being abused. I just knew I had these tendencies that were troubling. And now I'm coming to learn that, yeah, there really were problems. And we talk about this death by 1,000 pinpricks and saying, yeah, it's control, it's manipulation, it's power over, it's confusing the story, you know, convincing you that you're crazy. All of these things. And how many of us have been through that? So the first thing is realizing, oh my gosh, this is really inappropriate. This is really terrible. And then the other piece of that is that the abusers themselves often don't know, at least in their own mind, they have no awareness that they are abusing. For them, they are acting in ways that feel natural to them. And so it just becomes this very difficult, convoluted thing to come out of. Is there anything that you can offer to listeners? Maybe somebody's listening to this who says, yeah, I think my relationship might be inappropriate or abusive or toxic. Is there anything that you can share from your personal experience that might help them come to some deeper level of realization about that?
Yeah. Gosh, you know, it is really a slow, I mean, for me, and I think for most of the women that I have coached who have been in a similar situation. It's really, unfortunately, it's a slow awareness over time. And if I look back at my journey, when I really first started, part of the problem is that when you're, at least for me, when I was being abused at the beginning, I would try to fight back and I'd be like, try to argue back. And I'd just be like, no, that's not right. You know, and you're misconstruing what I've said, or I'd try to stand my ground and just try to stick up for myself. But the abusers, and especially narcissistic abusers, have this way of really kind of twisting your words around, and you just get exhausted. And so it's really just out of total exhaustion that you just give up and you say, okay, fine. You know, it's whatever you say is fine. So somewhere in the back of your head, though, somewhere in the back of your body, somewhere in your body lives your intuition that tells you, this man, this isn't right. This doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel good. You know, for me, it was just kind of always in the back of my neck and the back of my shoulders. I could just feel this kind of pull, like a hook almost, be like, man, this doesn't feel right. So, I would start to kind of quietly on my own research, what abuse was and look for examples. And really I was looking for other people's stories, because you can go to, you know, websites and hotlines and you can get really beautiful definitions of abuse, but I really wanted people's stories. I wanted to hear like verbatim what had happened to other people that was abused, so I could compare it to my story. And so there are lots of books out there. I can't really think of any off the top of my head, but there's lots of stories out there and examples of abuse. So really I just started to educate myself. I also was in therapy at the time, and I, you know, talked about this with my therapist and kind of got a perspective from, you know, a therapeutic perspective on what abuse was, and, you know, kind of got validated from them. So it's just kind of like a slow collection of evidence and slowly building up your case, basically, to realize that, yeah, something's not right. And at the end of the day, though, when you're in a narcissistic narcissistically abusive relationship, you really just have to trust yourself. And it's the hardest thing to do, because they've broken you down and made you feel like you're worthless and you don't trust yourself and you're never right and they're always right. But at the end of the day, it really just boils down to just listening to that tiny little voice inside that says over and over again, this is not right. This is not right. Finally, at the end, I just thought, you know what? I have tried it every which way. And then some. The only thing I haven't tried is to leave. And I just decided I didn't want to live another day like this. I didn't want to live another. I remember I was walking through the park. I was walking through the park with my dog at the time, and I was crying again. We'd just gotten in another fight. And I said to myself, do I want to be walking through this park crying 10 years from now? And the answer was no. And I thought, shit, 10 years? Do I want to be walking through this park crying 6 months from now? No. Do I want to be walking through this park crying tomorrow? No. Well, then the only thing I could do was leave. So, but I had done a lot of research and a lot of talking to therapists and, you know, a lot of reading other people's stories online. I didn't know anybody in person that had ever been abused, but that's kind of how I started to see the light, see that things weren't right.
Yeah. I mean, such a powerful story. Thank you for sharing that. It's the sharing of these stories and these insights, and in the more, like you said, when you were going through it, you were looking for other people's descriptions. So you just describing that for people may help the light bulb go off for some to say, yeah, this is, this relationship I'm in is abusive, or the relationship I'm trying to recover from was abusive, and to validate that. I go back to my days as a surgeon where we had this sort of mantra we would say is, with regards to certain conditions that you might pop up with in surgery, and you'd say, if it enters your mind, you should probably do it. You know, if it's something you think about, you should probably do it. Mm-hmm. And what I was struck with when you were talking right there is, you know, if you're in a relationship and there's a question in your mind, like, is this abusive? It probably is.
Oh my God. Yes.
It probably is.
And it's so funny. You and I have talked about this, but I was listening to NPR the other day, and they were interviewing a couple that had a lot of struggles in their life, like not of their own fault, just like life kind of happened to them. And the interviewer said, and this couple was trying to survive as a couple despite all these odds that had been thrown against them. And the interviewer said, you know, relationships are hard enough as it is. And I thought to myself, wow, don't we as a society really have this narrative that relationships are supposed to be hard? Because that's the biggest bunch of bullshit I've ever heard in my life. I mean, and I can say that now being in a relationship with someone who just makes everything so easy. And it's, and they should be that way. That's the way they're supposed to be. Relationships should have ease and peace and grace and love and kindness baked into it. And life is hard and you get through it together. But we as a society are just so used to thinking that everything, you know, has to have some level of pain or and hardship to it. And that certainly, you know, fed the narcissistic monster of an abusive relationship that I was living in at the time.
I've described it for some of my clients. I've described it as, imagine that you're in a car, and all of the and one of the tires is missing a big piece, so it's bumpy, right? And so the tire itself is bumpy, and you could be going over the smoothest road and you're going to feel bumps, versus all your tires are perfectly smooth and in great shape, and you're driving down the road, and then suddenly you hit a bump and you have to go over it, and then once you get through the bump, it's smooth again. Mm-hmm. And to me, a healthy relationship is all the tires are working fine, and we hit the bumps and we go over it, and we get to the smooth road again. Mm-hmm. So many people, especially in abusive relationships, it's just the bumps are constant. So you don't know when you're hitting the bumps in life. You just always feel like there's bumps.
Yeah, well, that, and then the abuser is always telling you that the bumps are your fault. And so correct. You spend all this time trying to fix all these bumps in the road, and the bumps keep showing up, and you're like, but crap, I just fixed that bump and there's another one. And I just, you know, you spend all this time trying to prevent the bumps from happening, trying to fix all these things because you're being told constantly that it's your fault. And if you were only better at this, or, you know, better looking, or, you know, whatever, better in any way, then things would be fine. So yeah, it's, I love that analogy though. Things do not have to be hard. That's just such a farce. And we really do ourselves a disservice thinking, you know, with that kind of attitude of relationships are hard enough. They're really.
Yeah. And I want to just mention one more thing about the problem before we get into the solution. And that is, we talk in this show about the brokenness beliefs of not enough, not worthy, not lovable, not wanted, or some version thereof. And you can see how the narcissist just latches onto that and then just rides it for all it's worth, right? It's the not enoughness belief. It's like, you know, it's your fault. If you were only prettier enough, if you were only better at this, if you were only smarter, if you could only do this. And how you just keep trying to be better. You know, for me, it was not lovable. And so in relationships that I would just work and work and work to try to prove that I was really, you know, worth someone's love. And they latch right onto it. Like there's just no pleasing. And it's, again, for some people, it's not really their fault. It's the dynamics that get created with these things. But with an abuser, especially ones that are so subtle and so, we keep using this word, insidious, kind of sneaky, like narcissist. It's like they just latch on to the one thing, because remember, it's about power and control. Mm-hmm. And so they latch on to that one thing they know that they can get a hold of inside of you to control you. And so powerful. But I want my listeners to equate that with that brokenness belief. Until you shift that belief, there's no hope really of getting out and finding yourself intact on the other side. But what Peyton goes to in her book, which is what I want to turn our attention to now, and she's mentioned a couple of times, is what is it that gets you free, right? What is it that starts to open? I think of coming out of an abusive relationship or out of an abusive situation, or even, you know, kind of coming out of the fog of early life trauma, as sort of like being in a dark room where suddenly the curtains part just enough to let in a little bit of light. So you start to realize, oh, there's something beyond this dark room that I'm stuck in. And so we want to start opening those curtains and eventually get outside into the warmth of the daylight. That's the metaphor I often use. And for you, you describe this process of creating space, of taking good care of yourself, and of accessing and honoring and using your intuition. Now, the word intuition means a lot of things for a lot of people. So when you're talking about intuition, how would you just define or describe that for the listeners?
When I'm talking, yeah, intuition is a broad word. But in the book, using your intuition is really being able to tune in to your own innate ability to tell you what is right for you. And that is your, what is your truth. So your body knows what's right for you and what's in alignment with your truth. And your body knows what is out of alignment and what is wrong for you. And so, especially when you're in a narcissistic or any kind of an abusive relationship, really tuning into your body and being able to really get quiet and listen for, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I need. This is perfect. This is so in alignment with who I am, down to the juicy inner core, I think you've said before, versus, man, this just feels off. This is not okay. This doesn't feel like it's good for me. You know, that is what I speak. You know, that's really what intuition is all about for the sake of the book.
And so for my listeners, so when you say when you're out of alignment with your truth or out of alignment with what your intuition is telling you and your body knows it, what is it that they will experience or what kind of sensations will they have when their body knows that?
Yeah, so it's different for everybody. And there's an exercise in the book by a woman named Sandra Ingerman that she uses in her book, Soul Retrieval, about how to figure out how your intuition feels in your body. But, you know, you and I have a similar background in medicine. And so once I started studying and getting in touch with my intuition, at the same time I was practicing medicine, I realized that our bodies feel our intuition as the stress response. So when you are in alignment with your truth, and everything is benefiting your highest good, everything in your life is benefiting your highest good, you tend to have a sense of peace, of calm. Your muscles tend to be relaxed. Your breathing tends to be easy. Your heart rate tends to be lower. And that's what we call the rest and digest. It's the opposite of the stress response. That's where, as humans, we're supposed to live. When you're out of alignment with your truth, when things are not right, when something's off, your body will elicit a stress response. And it's called the sympathetic nervous system. And you will feel maybe some heart palpitations or your heart rate will start to go up. Most people feel like a tightness in their chest. Their muscles will get really tight, especially the muscles in the shoulders and the back of the neck. People feel something in the pit of their belly and their stomachs. They feel a sense of dread or fear, anxiety. They have racing thoughts. They just kind of tense up all over. Maybe feel like choked in the throat.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that resembles a stress response or a stress reaction usually is your body telling you that something's off, that something's not right.
Yeah, and that's such a powerful recognition. Because some of us, especially growing up with the impact of early life trauma, have lived in a chronic stress response and just think that's life. We don't realize there's another way to be, or we think there's something wrong with us, or we need to be diagnosed with something, an anxiety, panic disorder, depression, and we certainly have those things. But part of what we're offering here is hopefully a path towards freedom for just to find contentment in your own skin and to honor yourself and to have the hope that, yes, there is a loving, honoring, supportive relationship out there for me, because I believe that we all deserve that. And so when you talk about intuition, again, I just want to parse this just a little more. So when you talk about intuition, how do we know what is intuition? So if you say, okay, something's definitely off here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Intuition versus fear. You know, if I'm in a job that maybe is really demanding, or I'm in a relationship where things are tough, how is there a way to tell what is, you know, my intuition telling me something truthful versus fear versus desires of my ego, which can sometimes be a little bit askew? I hope that question makes sense. Is there something you can use that will say, yes, this is the truthful thing for me that I need to really listen to?
Yeah, it absolutely. So it does get there are some gray areas when we talk about our intuition, because you know, we can be in a space of joy and love and peace and still maybe not be in the right situation for us. And, you know, conversely, we can be making a decision that's right for us that feels scary. And because it feels scary, you might feel a little tense about it, but that doesn't mean that it's the wrong thing. And the thing that I like to say is I think the easiest way to describe it is when you're making a decision or you're in a place that is out of alignment for you, it will feel kind of like anxiety or panic. Whereas if you are in a place where, I'm trying to think if I'm doing a good job. So the ego always feels like fear and anxiety and panic. Mm-hmm. You can be getting an intuitive ping that something's wrong, but still have a sense of calm, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I can sit here and think about, I could sit here right now today and think about going back to my relationship with my ex. And I can feel how my muscles get tense in my body. And I can make a decision not to do that from a place of calm and peace. Yeah. Even though I'm feeling and my body feels, oh man, it would feel terrible to go back there. Yes. You know, so typically when you're when it's your intuition telling you this, that there's something wrong, there's still a sense of calm and peace about it because you're in alignment, you're following your intuition. But if there's ego involved and it's really just fear and ego, but really you are making the right decision, then it'll feel more like anxiety, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And I think this is my interpretation of your description of Sondra Ingerman's exercise in her book that I sometimes will use with my clients, and and to say that when it's the difference between being in alignment with your intuition and not in alignment with your intuition is the feeling in your body of when somebody when you meet someone or you've met someone several times and they come up and they say your name and you have familiarity with them, versus if that person walks up to you and calls you by the wrong name. And it just, something feels off in your body. Like, you know, like they may have made an honest mistake, but there's something like when somebody just keeps calling you the wrong name over and over again, when you think they should know it, like there's this thing that lights up in your body that says, something.
It doesn't feel right. It just feels kind of, ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that it's something practical like that as a guidepost to say, you know, if your things just feel off in your body, like things just aren't right, They probably aren't.
The other thing too, Peter, that I talk a lot about is the importance of staying in alignment, like the importance of staying in a place of peace and calm and truth. And here's why. So if you can imagine that you are, you're standing there and you've got 100 people poking their index fingers in your shoulders and your back over and over and over again. And those 100 people are trying to get your attention, telling you there's something wrong. At some point, you're not going to know which finger is what. You're just going to get used to all the poking because there's so much of it that you're not even going to realize that there's anything going on anymore, that anybody's poking you. So that's a classic example of you're so overstimulated and so stressed that when somebody comes along to really get your attention and poke you, you're not going to notice it because you're just so numb to all of the poking. However, if you're in a place of truth and alignment and you're standing there, then there's nobody poking you. There's no extra stress. There's no external stimuli that you've become numb to. So when that little intuitive hit comes up and taps you on the shoulder and says, hey, this isn't right, then you actually are in a place where you can feel it. So that for me, I like to tell my clients that, because I'm like, okay, we want to get you in a place where you spend most of your days in alignment. You spend most of your days peaceful and calm. So that when something does happen that's out of alignment for you, you can actually recognize it.
You see it coming from a mile away.
You see it coming from a mile away versus, you know, you're juggling so many things that, you know, somebody's got a knife in your back and you don't even feel it because you're so distracted with other crap.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the important thing to point out, I mean, this may sound like a lot, especially for people who are maybe just coming to this content or who are maybe early in the healing process or trying to figure out which way to go. And I want to say that both of us, Peyton and I, both work from a premise that you are already fine. Like you living in your own truth, like this is available to everyone. This ability to be calm and content and even confident in your own skin and living in a life that is in alignment with yourself, that feels good, where you wake up and you face your day. Maybe some days are hard. Maybe things are tough. But again, that you're living a life that largely feels peaceful or even joyful. And we do believe that regardless of what you've been through, that this is available to everyone. It's just a matter of realizing it and then having the tools and the support and to be empowered to make the choices that then help lead you down that path. At the end of Peyton's book, she says, there's only one tool you need to tap into the magic that you already possess.
Yeah.
Your intuition, right?
Right.
You already have the magic. There's not anything you need to create, do differently. That just feeds the ego story of, I need to be something more to have what I want. I need to be something different to gain the love and acceptance that I crave, or to avoid abandonment. But the fact is, you only ever need to be yourself. And if there's people in your life that are telling you otherwise, then that's something that you need to pay attention to, I think. I do, as we start to kind of wind down here, I do want to give people some information on where they can find your book, how they can get a hold of you, what the next step might be. I know that you have some resources in place, so if you'd like to share those, then...
Yeah, absolutely. So my book is on Amazon. You can just go to Amazon and type in Rise Up From Ash.
And we will have that link in the show notes as well.
Mm-hmm. You can also go to my website, which is www.PeytonHTurner. That's PeytonH as in Henry, Turner, TURNER.com. And there's a link that says order the book, where you can just click on the tab, yeah. And it takes you to the Amazon website. There's also a link there where you can send me a message. If you can go to the subscribe tab, you can subscribe to my blog.
And then you get something in return for
Yeah, and you get something in return. I put together like a little 2-page worksheet on how you can, some things you can do to help set yourself up to tap into your own intuition, if you subscribe. And you can get in touch with me either through my website or you can just straight up email me. It's Peyton@PeytonHTurner.com.
Yeah, and so I'll have those links, the email, the website, the book, I have all those in the show notes so people can just click and go. Like myself, Peyton loves to hear your stories, would love to hear how this, her message or her book, touched you in whatever way. If you'd like to, you know, speak to Peyton, there's a link on her website also to set up a free discovery call. So please, you know, reach out if this, is, meaningful to you, or you think this could help. Any last sort of words of wisdom or advice or anything you would like to let the listeners know as we wind up?
I just want, there's so much, but I just want everybody to, you know, I have worked with in medicine and now with my coaching clients, with people in very intimate ways. People who have been at what they believe to be their worst moments. And I will tell you that in sharing space with people in their dark moments, every single person to me is still absolutely beautiful. And everybody out there has the power to heal. Just like Pete said, you know, it's just, I tell everybody, your only job is to be in alignment with your truth. That's it. And everything else will fall into place. So when you feel like the world's turning upside down and you feel like you have nowhere to turn, you just get back into alignment and then everything else will fall into place. Yeah.
Such a powerful message.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I always say, you know, love yourself for your flaws, for your differences, for your quirky oddities, for your eccentricities, for all the things that you carry shame about. Love yourself for those things, not in spite of them. It really is what makes us beautiful, are those parts of us that are damaged, that are tender, that are challenging at times. And we all carry them. And so the harder thing is to pretend that we don't have them and try to look around them. The courageous thing is to look in the mirror, see them fully, and then love yourself anyway. So Peyton's book, Rise Up From Ash, is such a powerful testament to that exact thing, how to do it, how to get your life back in alignment, how to learn to trust yourself again, and ultimately how to love yourself for all that you've been through. Because when you can do that, you truly experience yourself as unbroken. I want to say just a big, big thank you to Peyton for coming on the show today. A big, big thank you to all the listeners who continue to provide such amazing feedback to me. I see that a lot of people have downloaded the previous episode with the interview with Andy Margis. I'm sure this one's going to be very popular. I love that you all are supporting the guests that we have on the show. It's just so meaningful and so powerful, and it tells me that we're doing something to make a positive difference in your life. So as always, as Peyton offered her contact information, my contact information is in the show notes as well. Reach out, find me on Instagram @PeteIsUnbroken. Email me by clicking the link in the show notes. I'd love to hear from you. I look forward to seeing you again soon. Once again, my name is Pete, reminding you that I am, you are, and we are unbroken.